Judiciary Committee, please come to order. Take the roll, please.
Senator Glassman, Senator Joseph.
Here.
Senator Pettijohn.
Here.
Senator Ziegler. Chairman Wright.
Here. Quorum is present. First order of business is Senate Bill 453. That's the Ziegler. Well, we'll put that aside and work on 430. Mr. Schrock, come forward, sir. Identify yourself. Whatever testimony you believe to be relevant.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Schrock. I'm Executive Director of the Alcohol and Drugs Control Board. The board felt an obligation to make some comments about the bill. I'd like to see if it's true. This bill was introduced at the board's request. If you like, Mr. Chairman, I can just go down the sections.
You can go right through the sections, sir. Yes, sir.
Section 1 deals with an area that is sort of a change of policy, not a change in policy, but a strengthening of policy. The board finds itself in front of many times with licensees who, at least in the board's estimation, don't intend to operate a license in good faith. They anticipate or experience that we've seen a licensee will operate and require 30 days and then have a tendency to terminate the operation of the business. And the board doesn't believe that either serves the licensee or serves the public. The board believes that if someone is going to exercise the privilege of the license, that they do it in good faith and at least show, think of showing that they're going to operate it to serve the public for 30 days and experience the board hasn't been sufficient enough in their minds. The second section.
Are there any questions? Mr. Schrock, I know what you're speaking of my tenure on the board. I wonder if there would be a circumstance if we're too strict, given that the licensed premises are under construction, what if there isn't something else in there that we could. It seems to me that there are other circumstances where a licensee cannot take over the premises and as such it's through no circumstance of his own, but he's just waiting till the whatever is required to, whether it's somebody else is moving out and he's going to move in or he's valid, at least he's shows good faith to the board, but unless the premises are under construction specifically, then he can't do it.
Mr. Chairman, the board, the cases I've been exposed to that have come before the board has acted very broadly. And they've taken, I think, imputed construction or cannot be operated through no fault of the licensee or applicant.
That takes care of cannot be operated, right?
That's the way the board is construed, yes.
Very good point.
The second section was trying to bring into certain application requirement that it could be denied or should be denied if the applicant made statements of material fact, false statements of material fact. That particular section is contained in the other sections dealing with transfers of location and new applications. Section 3 is just an addition of referencing, in fact, Section 3, 4, 5 is just referencing other statutes or sections in the law that should come into play in consideration of that particular local option provision in the law.
When I recodified the act, we were thinking about that, but then we didn't know which ones we were going to go with, so we just had to leave them out. So I'm glad that you're picking this up, because we knew there was a problem.
Well, I think your sense was at the time, too. The more we can at least be repetitious of referencing in the law, it helps understand it.
Doesn't hurt. Correct.
I think that takes us through Section 7. That's also referencing applicable local option provision to 500D in the present law. I think I skipped one, maybe it's in the back.
Section 9?
Yes.
10.
Right. The current provision requires that, as you can see, the word being deleted is registered. We found that it doesn't really make a lot of difference. I don't think it's a registered, certified, or whatever. Registered mail, and it costs $3.50 an envelope. Certified mail is $1.50, and the staff has certified cards for about 400 to 500 package store licensees. And in return from it, I haven't really seen any return. Other than apparently licensees are getting notified, even us keeping track of 450 return receipt cards, it's a little burdensome. So all the idea here is to drop the word register and keep the provision that we notify package store licensees when there is a local option election which bans importation. I think that is a goal.
The only problem with that, of course, is that you don't have an official.
We don't have a record. I agree.
The record is that you that gives you no basis for a defense against a prosecution of yours, nor does it allow the. There's no specification that the package store license got the information.
That point's well taken. I can't argue that.
That was the only reason we put registered down there, was to have some record.
We do put a copy of the letter in the licensee's file. But that certainly doesn't indicate that you received it or not received it. It was just a cost and time factor. Both of those factors came into play with this.
How much are you charging to process licenses?
Just an application is
$50. $50 now?
We're contemplating the board to be raising that application fee. It's for discussion of regulations. Significant, but it's still an open, wide open area.
And what does it? What do they get for the $50?
A lot of hard work.
You don't get paid for that. You mean all the fees from the liquor license is what pays your salaries?
No.
Okay.
I mean, they get a lot of hard work from the staff.
I don't. The only thing is that I think that if there's some way that you could develop a record of receipt, fine. I don't care how you do it. But I think it's almost mandatory that they be. That there be some affirmative record that shows that they did receive the information for your own protection.
No, I understand the intent, but I doubt it. It's just been a burdensome way. If the postal system had another way they could do it, we would be able to see, maybe we could explore that, but we've tried to get it down to the easiest method possible.
Okay. You want to go on to the Section 10?
Section 10 is leaving the word in and the word or, making it either condition. For a drunk person to enter or remain on a license premises. Nice to extend my comments, Mr. Chairman.
One of your lawyers will have to help me with this. Allow a drunken person to enter or remain. Okay? That means if he's sober when he comes in, when he gets intoxicated there, he has to get off the premises, right?
That's correct. If the word or was being served.
I can see that where this might cause some problems, that many establishments do not have a person sitting at the door of the bar or the restaurant checking people there. You know, you walk in and you sit down at the bar or at a table. And under this provision, if somebody happened to walk into your establishment who was drunk, you would be violating the law when you fail to impede his entrance. And I can understand why we don't want people who are drunken to remain within a beverage dispensary. But I think it could be a possible problem. We're telling them they can't come in. Well, that means you really got to have somebody at the door checking.
Well, I think that they. The preface of that is a licensee, his agent, or employee may not, with criminal negligence, that's the safety fix there, allow a drunken person to enter or remain within licensed premises or to consume an alcoholic. We had that one recodifying, and we had to put that part in there so that we had the same question you brought up, and I think that we discussed that for ad infinitum.
I wish I would have been here. No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hadn't been aware of that yet.
That's okay. One of the arguments, and I know this is it's open to all kinds of thought.
Delicate area.
But I know that there are some bars, particularly in places that have a very severe winter climate, 40 below, that if a drunken person comes along and wants to get in, they'll take him in and sit him down in the back or let him lay down and go to sleep. They won't serve him anything to drink, and nobody will see that. And nobody knows. I mean, everybody sees him using him getting anything to drink. And while it is technically or literally a violation, it might be the same in the person's life too at the same time. We've had a lot of incidences on that. But from an enforcement position, it's almost impossible to enforce it because everybody would be just saved from the cold.
We left that at local discretion. We had that same discussion with the police departments.
I think we had it. That's where it was brought to my mind from the police force. They said, well, then they had this, was it Nome? No. Celebrated case of a Nome where they took the guy who was out in a snowbank. Senator Joseph had it all fixed up, so we found a drunken person to come and pick up and deliver it to the nearest place to sleep it off. Right? But they didn't have any of those, except jails. So this one, they took the guy to jail, and he also had a stolen camera and some other things. But then he was kicked out of the Supreme Court to appeal their overturning his conviction for burglary in the dwelling, because he said that the fruits from the tree were illegal or something. Tainted. Is there any questions for Mr. Schrock? Thank you, Pat.
Thank you. Would you like to keep that book? I can send you a note probably next week.
I can, I'll return it to you after this. You going to hang around for a little bit?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Don Hewley. I represent the Alaska Cabaret Hotel and Restaurant Association. First, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address you today, Mr. Chairman and members of the Judiciary Committee. On behalf of CHAR, I'd like to go on record as saying that we don't oppose or support this piece of legislation. But I do think that there are a few small things that, if done to it, could make it a much more attractive bill. The first thing that I would like to mention is the one that you brought up, Senator, about the registered mail. I think that's a good idea. I'm not quite sure exactly what the cost would be to continue the registered mail program. I didn't hear a figure, but I think your concern of acknowledgement of a problem is a very real one. And I think that the owner should be given the opportunity to be sure that some employee didn't pick up a letter and stick it in the drawer or what have you. Is that they have to sign for it, you know that they've received it, and they are responsible accordingly. The second thing I'd like to bring up, Senator, is in Section 3, line 15, it says, allow a drunken person to enter, on the back page, line 15, Section 9, paragraph 3, number 3. Allow a drunken person to enter or remain within a licensed premises or to consume an alcoholic beverage within a licensed premises. I think that the problems that you pointed out, Senator, are good ones. I think that we could go one step further, though. Let me give you an example. The president of CHAR, Tony DeSapio, owns a couple clubs in Anchorage. And when he has a person who's had too much to drink in his establishment, what he does, well, he does two things. The first thing he does is he refuses to serve them alcoholic beverages. But he also allows them to drink as much juice and or coffee as they want for free to sober them up in case they do have to drive their own vehicle home. Also, they are allowed to remain there as long as they want and can eat and drink all the juices and food that is at the bar available for free in hopes of sobering the person up a little bit. Now, if that does not work, they've initiated another program in Anchorage. There is a van system set up by an ex-convict that is used to take convicts around to apply for jobs and what have you. I guess there's a problem with transportation when you're a convicted felon. I don't know if it's because you can't get your license or what. But anyway, he has several vans at his disposal to take these felons around to their interviews and things like that. The president of CHAR has gotten together with this gentleman and set up a program whereby any CHAR member in the city of Anchorage, if they have a person who's too drunk to drive and they know that they're driving, can call up this van service. They will come to the bar, pick the gentleman up, and deliver them to their front door. Now, un- under this bill, it would be against the law for them to call the van because the guy couldn't wait inside the bar until the van got there. And accordingly, I think that it might be better if we could take it out where it says enter or remain within licensed premises and just let the sentence say allow a drunken person to consume an alcoholic beverage within a licensed premises. I think that would take care of Senator Pettijohn's concern. I think it would take care of a few of your concerns, Senator, and it would certainly take care of some of ours.
What caused me more concern than the liquor
company? That's going to create a terrific enforcement problem, though, because if a group is sitting at a table and there are eight glasses there, the investigator or prosecutor would have to determine that each of the beverage glasses had alcohol in it.
I think under the existing statute, if you remember again, it says that the licensee is agent or employees with criminal negligence allows it to stay in there, or to enter or to remain in there. That's the key words, with criminal negligence. In other words, it's tough enough for the enforcement agents to, but I imagine that if one came by or a policeman came by and your fella had him sitting there waiting to go on this truck or something, I think it could be explained. Because it certainly wouldn't be a criminal negligence to have him stand there for a minute.
Well, in Anchorage, that would be all right. Unfortunately, that's the only town that we have such a program set up in to actually come and pick them up at the establishment and take them to the residence. In smaller communities where we don't have access to that kind of program, if a person was driving a car and was in an establishment, it would be impossible for the owner, if he was a sincere one, to feed this guy coffee or juice and or some kind of food to sober him up so he could drive. Or call him a cab.
Well, calling a cab is fine, but I think most, I don't like to get into any arguments back and forth. It appears to me that if I remember correctly, and most of the scientific evidence is given that you can't sober up by eating or drinking, you have to just wait till the alcohol goes through your body.
That seems that would.
So it'd just be a period of time.
That would back up. That would back up, allowing them to sit there for a little while and sober up.
That part is fine. Any questions, Mr. Eagley? Thank you.
Thank you very kindly for the opportunity to speak, Mr. Chairman.
Leo Land. Come forward, sir, identify yourself, and give whatever testimony you believe to be necessary.
I'm glad I looked in. I'm Leo Land from Haines. And as an ex-alcoholic, good many years standing, reputation well known, I concur and disagree with some of the statements I just heard when I was here. Now, if I go back into drinking, I go to a bar, they refuse to soak or sell me anymore, fine. We say it's winter, they won't throw me out the door, naturally. They only have one opportunity to call the cops, if they refuse to go. Now, if they try to sober you up on coffee, as Senator Ray already said, I could sit there and drink gallons. I used to try that little trick, water for the gallons. It won't do it. You have to sleep, and you will. So I see problems in the way you do it. I don't see how you're going to do it. And I can understand the club owners and so forth concerns trying to help the state. As far as I'm concerned, it just creates more problems than already exist. I think that it's no use me going on. I could go on and on, really, because it's horrendous. Now, when I was an MP, one time during the war, I knew all the bar owners, restaurant owners, and I drank. So I go in there, they have a Coke bottle. Leo, you want a Coke? Sure. They had enough Coke in it, believe me, just to make the color. And I could do it bar to bar, as long as I could stagger around. So you're creating more problems, and I think, as far as I'm concerned, let it go the way it is. I don't see how in the hell you're going to help an alcoholic if you don't want to help himself in the first place. Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Land? Thank you very much. Sometimes you have very refreshing. Any other questions?
I would delete section 9 for the time being until we can figure out some other better way. But I feel it's almost necessary.
Talking about section 9?
Yeah. So that would go back to the existing language and say the board shall notify by registered mail all of those banks for a license. The only reason they don't do it is it costs too much money to say it's true. But I think it would cost
In the court system, you're allowed to use certified mail, which is cheaper.
Well, certified.
That's what we've been using.
Do you want to put certified in there?
Is certified that cost you? Certified is cheaper.
It's about $2 less than that.
Well, $2 principal. Then I will withdraw that motion and then change it to the board shall notify by registered or certified mail. How's that?
Seems to me like you've been in violation.
Did you want to prosecute
agency?
Bring the citizens arrest or something?
We asked Attorney General for an opinion about that before we did. The interpretation of the word was registered was just some form to have a positive reply.
How long did it take to get the opinion?
Well,
I can't believe it.
I think there have been cases that have gone to court where the word registered was used and certified was used instead of registering the court of laws of the statute of law, so there's all deference to the opinion.
There's a difference between registered and certified mail, believe me.
I think, Mr. Chairman, we certainly need to put registered or certified in, at least to legitimize what's going on.
So we'll put both of them in, shall we? Is that agreeable with the committee? I support the next section 10, I support that, because I can see that it says, somebody would say, an individual, the only way that you can allow a drunk to remain on, if he came in sober, you could allow him to remain when he got drunk under the existing language. But under the new language, it gives the agent or the licensee a chance to get drunk one way or the other. As far as the other sections, they appear to me, the 90 days is fine because there are incidences where the population just allows for maybe two licenses, and one individual has both licenses, and they'll keep one open for 30 days and close it down. And it keeps any competition from coming in. He just has more or less a monopoly that exists through the population quota. And at least 90 days shows a willingness and an attempt to really operate rather than 30 days. 30 days, that's a... 2.5 days a month? You know, you can open it for a week and close it for 2 months and open it for another week and close it for 2 months. I mean, that's not an operation of the bar or a license premise. So with those additions or those corrections, the rest are just identifying statutes. Other statutes within the existing laws.
Mr. Chairman, may I just ask one question?
Sure.
Going from the 30 to 90, I have no problem with that, but if this bill were passed in June or July, it talks about calendar years, that would really require conceivably a 3-month operation in 84 by somebody who thought that the year began that only a 30-day operation would be required. Is under cases like that, Mr. Chirac, that might require us to look at the effective date of give a person a full year to get a 90-day period.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Josephson has a point that's well taken. There may be people out here who are relying on the current statute.
All right, but we'll do that. We'll put two effective dates. Section 1 will become effective January 1st, 1985.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Is that agreeable? Is there any problem with the committee?
No.
Entertain a motion, gentlemen.
I move that we substitute the individual recommendation.
Is there an objection? I may do pass. I can tell you how he hangs out.
It's one question of how I look at the story.
Yeah. I was going to say, he has no worries anymore. After 10
today.
Opposites.
Yeah, no worries after today. Come and go as you please now. Next we have your bill, sir, Senate Bill 453. I'd like to have you take care of that. We have Mike Holmes. Come forward, sir, identify yourself and whatever testimony you need to relevant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mike Holmes. I'm the chairman of the Commission on Judicial Conduct. Senate Bill 453 was requested by the commission. It's basically a housekeeping bill. If you like, Mr. Chairman, I can go through it section by section. I'm not going to take very long.
I don't know. Does the committee, would you like Mr. Holmes to go through it?
Just to highlight what you
highlights. Senator Ziegler, why don't you take over there and say.
Okay, Mike, go ahead and tell us why the bill is before us and who requested it, why, and just what it does do.
The Commission on Judicial Conduct requested the bill. The first section is in response to the constitutional amendment that changed the both the name and the makeup of the former commission, which was the Commission on Judicial Qualifications. The first section basically conforms to the constitutional amendment, changes the makeup to conform to that amendment. Formerly, the commission consisted of 5 judges, 2 lawyers, and 2 laypersons. Under the amendment in the Constitution and in the bill, there are now 3 lawyers, 3 judges, and 3 laypersons. So that first section basically changes the makeup and changes the name to correspond to the constitutional amendment. Incidentally, on that first section, Art Snowden talked to me just before the hearing and wanted me to tell the committee that first section is not to be construed to mean that the Supreme Court will have a member sitting on this commission because they intend not to have a person on the commission because any appeal from a decision of the commission would have to be heard by the Supreme Court.
The bill doesn't say that, though.
No, it doesn't say that, and I pointed that out to him. It used to say that, but it doesn't anymore.
All right.
The second section, again on the second page, is primarily a housekeeping matter. It adds to the items which constitute judicial misconduct. Subparagraph E, conduct in violation of the Code of Judicial Conduct. That is the code adopted by the Alaska Supreme Court, which applies to all the judges in the state, and further defines judicial misconduct. So it's appropriate that be included. Section 3, I believe, just corrects a typographical error in the law. The number of the Administrative Procedure Act that's cited there was cited incorrectly. So that really is a correction. It's not a substantive change. Section 4 adds to the things that the commission can do when it finds...
Could we go back to Section 2 with the subsection 4?
Sure.
Tell me what habitually intemperate, does that mean of
moving?
Yeah, does that mean of drinking or of temperament?
That's a good question. That has never really been defined. I think it probably covers both. That seems to be the consensus of the commission at this time.
By argument, I think eventually temperament is predisposed to lose.
That's the primary meaning, but there are also indications that judges should not be intemperate in the sense that their temperament is supposed to be level.
Okay, I'll buy that.
So we've had some discussion on the commission, but I don't think it's ever even come up.
What does conduct that brings the judicial office into disrepute?
That's kind of a catch-all phrase that you have to look at the conduct first and then... it is something that, in fact, that brings the judiciary into disrepute.
I think you have a perfect example right here in your home folder, too, where the judge's conduct was considered to be intemperate by a majority of those counsel who appeared before him, in terms of language, in terms of shabby treatment of counsel, and to a degree, litigants, and I think that would be judicial intemperance.
No, I think Lee appealed to the voters.
I understand, Senator, but you asked the question.
Well, I mean, that's intemperate in whose eyes? Some of them slap them by golly, he isn't strong enough. It'd be a little bit tougher on some of those people that come in front of it who attempt to practice law instead of practicing it.
I guess the language that you referred to has been in the law for a long, long time, and I think it's similar to what's contained in the laws of other states on the subject. If that's any reason.
Why don't we change that to, this is a catch-all for anything that we don't like the judge to do. Go ahead, Mike.
Section 4 talks about the things that the commission can do after there's been a hearing on charges against the judge. And under the existing law, there are only three options. One is to exonerate the judge. Two is to reprimand him publicly or privately. And three is to refer the matter to the Supreme Court for suspension, removal, or retirement. The commission feels that there are some cases which where the judge should not be totally exonerated, but where he should be informally and privately admonished by the commission for conduct that does not quite come up to the level of judicial misconduct, but which should be brought to the judge's attention.
This means that you get him in there and say, if you don't shape up, we're going to get you next time for sure.
Something like that.
Seems to me that under part three there, you could do the same thing using that using that vehicle, couldn't you? Recommend the judge publicly or privately. If you were going to do this, you're going to do it privately anyway.
Reprimand or admonish, that's the degree of...
well, nevertheless, it's going to be done privately, which, you know, I'm not quite sure.
The commission has taken that to mean that we have to make a finding of misconduct before we can do that. And that would go in the judge's file. There are some situations, excessive rudeness, for example, which may not be the kind of thing that you would want to find that the judge has been guilty of misconduct, but that you would still want to bring to the judge's attention. So there is a difference in degree, and I think that's the distinction that the commission has made, that our hands are really tied. In order to get to the reprimand stage, we have to make a positive finding of misconduct. Don't want to have to do that in every single case.
Like if he was out with the boys, if he was up in Anchorage, he went to the strip joint and was sitting in the front row, and somebody saw him and called him over later and said, we wish you wouldn't do that.
That kind of thing. Yeah. But on the other hand, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that...
if he was in jeopardy.
It seems to me that that would also maybe encourage them to, rather than pursue it, to reprimand the judge. They decided that before they got that point, they could informally and privately what they could in effect be doing. Well, let's not pursue this any further. Maybe we're going to recommend it. Maybe we're not. Let's take the easy way out and just admonish him in privacy.
But what you're talking about is a slap on the wrist. It's contrary to distinguishing the blow that really hurts. That's what I think. If I understand.
Admonish is a warning, and a reprimand is something, official action that was taken.
But he did say that... But the only course they have open now is pursue it to that particular point. And what I'm saying is that they should pursue it to that point, but rather than do that, they would do it informally.
No, but I think what he's saying, Nick, is that under the existing language, they can only make an official reprimand, an official action of the council. And under the new language, they can do it informally, and then nothing really happens. Senator Ziegler said it's more or less a slap on the wrist or a warning.
Sure,
don't do this anymore, but under the existing language, they must take official action and put something, a reprimand, in his jacket, and it stays in there.
Well, the point still being that maybe they should do that eventually. Maybe we're opening a door to them to avoid doing that.
That's why you have a
commission. Mr. Chairman, I think this is designed to meet, like the situation of someone who uses alcohol. It may not affect him on the bench, but he may have to discreetly off the bench. In that situation, as an alternative to a reprimand, commission could call upon the judge to undergo therapy, drug abuse, or alcohol abuse therapy, tolerance therapy, that kind of thing.
I don't think that's really the intent. It's a situation where the commission can't really find that there's judicial misconduct, but feels that the allegations, there's enough to the allegations, although it's not misconduct, it's something the judges should not be doing. And permitting the commission to communicate that idea to the judge. The way it is now, if you don't find him guilty, you exonerate him.
Every action they take now must be an official action with official reactions. But under this, it can do it informally and call the guy in and say, hey, knock it off.
Mr. Chairman, why was my example not appropriate? I remember the commission and the judge came up who had been seen staggering down the street while attending a judicial conference in Anchorage, and his home base was Juneau. And that was reported. Why, or there were a couple of incidents like that, why could not the commission call the judge to go to AA or to get alcohol screening or something like that?
Well, without looking at the rules, I'm not sure, but I suspect that appearing drunk in public is the kind of thing that would be judicial misconduct of some level.
Can a layman bring charges against the judge for being drunk in public?
Sure. Absolutely, sure.
I can put them there.
We'll judge him.
No, here, I think that your point was well taken, but is this they have no way now, this is the fourth time, I guess, maybe I'll get it right. They have no way now to do anything informally. They must do it all officially, and as such, they have to put something in his personnel record. And now, all they can do is, what they do is they can warn him now, and if he doesn't take the warning, then he can take the responsibility of his action.
For sure, it sums it up right. This puts a guy on notice. He better shake up. Otherwise, he's apt to be in deep trouble.
Next time, they go over the road with him.
But this is all subject to, well, it says the commission may. It doesn't say they shall do these things. They can hold a hearing and do nothing.
They have that power.
Right, so I mean, the thing, I guess the point I was trying to make is that it seems to me that under certain conditions they could. Maybe the judges should be reprimanded. But before they go through this whole process to get to that point, they might conclude, well, it's easier to do it this way here and be on to something else.
I think it seems to me that if you're worried about what actions this group may take, you're pretty well protected. You've got three judges, justices, and three members who've done this law for 10 years, which gives certainly the attorney members a degree of experience, and three committee members. And I'm pretty sure that whatever they do will probably be, in your eyes and mine, the right result. You know, have a little faith in your fellow man is what I guess I'm trying to say.
Mr. Chairman, this will be after a hearing. The commission right now holds a hearing, and at the conclusion of the hearing and the testimony of the evidence, they can do one of three things. They can exonerate him, which is, as Mr. Holmes states, happens when no misconduct has occurred, but it also might happen in a case while there was no misconduct, there was improper behavior. And the exoneration, as I understand it, can't be used by a judge whose actions were questioned as a statement, I did nothing wrong. I was exonerated. And what I think they're trying to be able to do is find, they're not going to find that he was acted with misconduct. They're not going to recommend. But they do want to take him behind closed doors after the hearing, after he's been exonerated, and explain to him that while you have been exonerated and you did not actually commit misconduct, you came close and you shouldn't do it again.
You were lucky.
Like firing a warning shot.
I hope they had a message before they got to that point, though. It seems to me after the hearing process, obviously you know something is wrong, and maybe they should reevaluate their own actions rather than go pursuing any further. So the message is there in any case.
Correct.
So,
well, Mr. Chairman,
sir,
if the present state of the law was that the commission had to find exoneration before reprimand, take more serious action, then I would have some trouble with this because I think, and this is your point perhaps, that we might be opening the door to sort of whitewashing things in an admonition sense. But as I understand it, the commission already could elect to do nothing. Not in the case of exoneration, but in the case where the judge could not properly be exonerated, the commission could still elect to do nothing.
That's what the statute says, but I don't think that would ever happen. I think any time the charges are filed, the commission follows through all the way. It makes a finding of dismissing it or some finding of misconduct or private reprimand if that's permitted.
The key word to that is on line 28 of page 2, where it says the commission may. That's an existing language, so it says they might do any of these things, but they don't have to. So that's the point. It still is on the board. It's within existing statute that they don't have to do anything yet after they have the hearing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that
for, just for nothing else but for appearance's sake, I think the commission is going to do something there. They have a hearing on an allegation of misconduct of the judge, take evidence, confront the judge with the charges, allow him to respond, then simply just, okay, well, we're going to do it.
They
I don't think
the
they do that.
They haven't in the past.
Well, I don't know. Mr. Holmes has been on there for a few years.
It's never happened since I've been on there. 2 years, I guess. But I don't know what happened before that.
Seems to me they can do that already.
I was on the... I think this was the qualifications, or this judicial qualifications?
It was.
Yes, yeah. I was on there one night. When it was probably at that time. We took some information and we didn't do it.
Did you have a hearing?
Yeah.
I always assumed that this is a commission that was a very small workload. About how many cases are actually processed?
I'm not sure what the statistics are now. It's something like 90, something in the ballpark of 90 complaints a year.
That's the entire judiciary, all of them.
Yeah, there are only 100 judges.
Maybe what's bothering me a little is that after you go into this private meeting with the judges, whether you're going to reprimand them or admonish them, or whatever you might do, does that end the matter? Do you make the results public in some manner or other after you've had a private meeting, or is that it?
I don't think there's a private meeting envisioned. I would think that would be a written admonishment.
Oh, under 3, I thought it says you could either do it privately or publicly.
Yeah, privately means we don't send a copy to the Supreme Court or anybody else. A letter to the judge telling him, here's our impressions.
What would you do under Section 2 then, which informing him privately then? Would that require some type of communication after that?
I believe that the copy of that has to go to the Supreme Court.
I see. With no other...
I think the same thing with the legislature and the council. And as the medical board, there's a similarity. Don't they have a similarity? The bar, the Alaska bar, don't they have the same thing?
So.
Halibut fishermen?
Not necessarily saying that's right, though. You know, there are some people out there who are totally against the private meetings, whether it's our body or anybody else's. So that's a different issue.
Any other questions for Mr. Ross? Did you discuss all of them, Mike?
No, there's a couple more sections. Section 5... Section 5 has to do with the what constitutes a majority of the commission for official actions. And the way it's worded now, it would take 5, 5 being a majority of 9, which is the total makeup of the commission. The reason for the change is to allow the majority to be simply a majority of those serving on the commission at the time the action is taken. Last year, at one point in time, we only had 7 members. You have to have a majority of 5. Sometimes makes it a little more difficult to conduct business. So this is simply to facilitate business when there are less than 8 members.
The act is taken or the action is taken?
That's the existing language. I can't take any credit for that. I guess that's
the language.
Pardon me?
That's the language. Serving on the commission at the time the act is taken.
Oh, it's the sentence starts out, no act. So it tracks with the beginning of it. Let's see, Section 6. Section 6 basically adopts the same language that's contained in the regulation of the existing regulation of the Commission regarding confidentiality and disclosure of proceedings, and is similar to what we have in other states. Section 7 is new. That has to do with requiring a judge to submit to a physical and mental examination if there's a question as to his physical or mental fitness. And that's something that's totally missing from the law now, and it needs to be in there.
That's brand new, right?
That whole section is new.
Okay.
Section 8 is just to change the name to the present name.
Don't you want to add something to what you said about Section 7? Because if the judge refuses to submit to a physical or mental examination, the mere fact of that refusal may affect adversely the decision on the hearing. That is to say, the commission can consider the
legal breathalyzer.
Right, whatever, sure, same thing.
Are we going to be required to take mental tests in legislature, Mr. Chairman?
Never.
Over my head, Brian.
Come on, you got a quorum.
Yeah, we had to get a quorum.
Section 9 just provides for, excuse me, staggered terms for the members. So we all get paid at the same time.
All right, any other questions?
Okay, just one, I'm just really curious. Reference to the quorum. Definitely a problem that there's been so many vacancies over the years that it makes it difficult to transact business. It seems that this is a very important commission.
Yeah, it was after the makeup of the commission was changed and the whole thing had to be reappointed. For a period of time last year, we only had 7 members. We're up to 8 now. We need one more non-lawyer, non-judge member.
Mr. Chairman, I would put the bill out for a change of individual recommendations.
Could I say one of the... One of the committee members asked that the Bar Association for recommendation, and I have a letter from the president of the Bar Association urging passage of the bill. I can submit that to the committee. Other than that, I don't have any further...
Do you want to strike Section 5?
No, I was wondering that.
Back to the original language?
I don't know how we handle these.
I think it should be a majority of the members that it requires.
I have a feeling that it's a very important condition. I would think that...
Well, then they already have one.
They ought to have...
Go back to where we are. Delete Section 5. Then do it back to the original. Is that your motion?
That's what I think, but probably, in as much as this is a very sensitive area, it seems to me that they should...
No. Let's go back to the existing language. You must have 5 members or a majority.
Mr. Chairman, the only problem is that if the commission is short-handed and a majority, let's say, finds judicial misconduct, the majority of those who heard the case find judicial misconduct. Existing language precludes that from being an active commission. There may be 2 dissidents of the attendance or something like that. That's why this change may be desirable.
So you have 3 guys on there and 2. Suppose you only have 3 on there. 2 guys are going to make the determination.
Well, you still have to have a quorum. It's 9 and 15.
Yes.
You still have to have 5. So you still have to have at least a majority of the quorum.
That's a minority of the entire board.
But suppose you only have 7 people. That would be 7?
No, it's presently it was 7 last year.
Well, something as strict as recommending that you should have enough members. I think. After all, I don't see where the legal members, the lawyer members, they're the ones that recommend the judges anyway, and they're the ones that are always carping about them once they get them in. And the attorneys are the ones that are always, they're the ones that nominate the judges.
Yes.
And after they get them in, they're the ones that squawk about it.
No,
Mr. Chairman, not the public that squawks about it.
That's not true.
Mr. Chairman, I would urge that you retain mainly because... who else has served on boards or commissions out of the full board? For us, 5 members. You meet every quarter. I don't know how often the commission or judicial conduct meets every quarter. You got 9 people from all over the state, and they've all got to get together at one particular time, at one particular location, every 3 months. And some of them aren't going to be there. Some of them aren't going to be on vacation. Some of them are going to be ill. Some of them are going to have important trials that they're involved in. And so you're going to have 1 or 2 people missing. And in practice, the way it worked on the parole board is that you sort of knew who wasn't going to make it, and if there was something coming up that was important, you wanted to make sure that the members that were going represented a majority of the board. And the question of a minority being able to take action was handled informally by sort of the common consent of the membership. So just the fact that you got 9 people in a state as big as this from all over having to get together to take problems from it. Some of these cases, they want to act expeditiously on it. If there's a serious charge against the judge, they want to take care of it.
I feel the same way about the judicial council, or the legislative council, too, I'm sure.
I hadn't thought of that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think you had.
But,
there is a serious case against the
judge. No, but it seems to me that there is a serious case against the judge that would be all that difficult to get filed.
It's a cut and dry case, it should have the votes, right?
Well, it's the cut and dry ones that are easy. It's the ones that aren't cut and dry that are difficult.
Well, maybe the board is too large. Cut it down to three. We'll take it all. Get all three at the same time.
I'll volunteer. I'll be the main one.
We can take a judge and a member, an attorney on.
We don't have a motion. Did you have a motion? We're just talking.
No, but I think
formally.
I think it's sort of the least serious stuff. Seriousness.
I think we should allow that. You know, I think that those who are on that commission.
I'm going to make a motion. Can you make a motion?
By German or by.
I can make that too, but I mean. Delete section 5?
I totally delete section 5. Mass and absence.
Everybody has heard the arguments. How many in favor of deleting section 5? Carried. Which that was all I was voting with. Well, the amendment fails. Now, sir, do you have to begin?
I'll do my motion.
Individual rights. Is there an objection? How many do pass?
Well organized, I'll tell you.
Well, it's that three very different than this.
Any day you've agreed on a change.
It's the first time.
You ever flex our muscles on this?
Talk about a closed group, see? Huh? No chance. Take the pill.
Thanks for trying to stack the change. Thank you, Mike.
Now we have an act related to permits for games of chance and skill, contests of skill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, thank you for this. The folders show that this request for this came from the company that region, which has which of course is a profit making regional corporation and has a nonprofit social service affiliate. And the nonprofit affiliates or groups cannot obtain a permit for bingo because they have not existed for 5 years, even though the regional corporation has. I introduced the bill in an effort to solve that problem, recognizing that nonprofits, some of the nonprofits have had reduced federal funding and also, by the way, have new federal tax requirements, which I understand have about 10% of the cost of operations. The trick here is that I certainly would not want to open this up to all kinds of ersatz groups that don't have a really legitimate organizational purpose. But I might add also that after I introduced Senate Bill 404, and I gave this letter to the leaders of the committee on February 14, Mr. Rue, the cook of the region, read the bill and felt that it might not do what he had wanted anyway, because the bill would seem to require that the applicant be related to another nonprofit.
Affiliated with.
Yeah. And so I've got new language which I'll serve that, and I think we solve that problem without doing any other changes. This would provide that the underlying language would read instead of what you see before you. The Commissioner may adopt regulations to waive the 5-year requirement if the organization is sponsored by a nonprofit or profit organization, so that the regional corporation could be the sponsor, which has been in existence continually for 5 years immediately before the applicant applied for a license, and if the Commissioner determines, one, that the applicant was not formed for the purpose of obtaining a permit, that is, it's not being an applicant who just materializes in order to get a permit, two, that the applicant is a qualified organization as herein defined, except for the 5-year requirement. A bona fide civic or service or religious charitable, etc., purposes and be nonprofit in character. And three, that the applicant will comply with the requirements and purposes of the chapter. Those changes, if made, would allow for a nonprofit organization that meets all the requirements except for the 5-year requirement to get a waiver if these findings are made. The other alternative that had been recommended by Cook-Inlet was to have a special bill covering nonprofit organizations. I think that would run into some difficulties.
It's one redundant joke. How could you, the applicant, form for the purpose of obtaining a permit if it's been in existence for 5 years? It must have been in before, or for some other reason.
Well, the applicant, under the amendment, would not have to exist for 5 years. That's the whole point. there may be some redundancy between one and two, because to find that the applicant is a qualified organization may mean that the applicant carries on the bona fide civil purposes. I have no...
Two surplus objection.
If so, I have no objection to eliminating one or two. Probably would be a better to keep two.
About prejudices, I don't find it worthy. Without prejudice, I don't find it worthy of my vote.
I think that the 5-year provision, the fact it was even suggested may not be constitutional, but I think that's probably not the argument that it probably is constitutional. But I think it serves no purpose if you make the other findings that the organization is bona fide and it does carry on important nonprofit charitable work. I really don't find the 5-year requirement particularly significant. Without some remedial legislation, groups like these are kind of caught in a catch-22. Tying into a profit corporation for the purpose of satisfying the 5-year requirement.
Okay.
This does not allow.
Do you want to make this committee subject?
Yes.
There's an objection to the items in the language.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir.
What is the position? Are there going to be regulations about
it? It says that the commissioner may adopt the regulations.
I have one question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
To you and or to Joe, how long have we had this proposed language in existence?
This is hot off the press. And that's because the letter of February 14th just came to my attention.
Okay, well, I'm not pressing that. I would suggest to the chair, speaking for myself only, of course, that perhaps we have all right, with me, I'm just opposed to it, so I didn't have a problem with it.
Maybe you could be persuaded to make the
trade. Sure.
We have people here from the Department of
Revenue. Oh, okay. Revenue or AG?
Revenue.
Well, you're fine, but I'd like to use the AG's office, too, without denigrating you at all.
Martin. Mr. Chairman, my name is Martin Richard. I'm the Director of Public Services for the Department of Revenue. I wanted to state the department was neutral on the original bill. Answer any questions that you might have.
How do you feel about the proposed amendment if you've even seen it?
I just read it. My first reaction is a little bit of concern over the language sponsored by a nonprofit or a profit organization. The bill that was originally introduced speaks of an association with an organization that meets the 5-year requirement. I think one of the main purposes of the 5-year requirement was to allow for an organization to be in existence and to function, to have some kind of stable activity before they get into gambling. With the substitute that's been proposed, it would seem to me that like Sears Roebuck perhaps could form a nonprofit group for their employees and jump right into gambling. I'd be a little concerned about that.
Well, no, because the applicant has to be qualified, and it has to exist already as a bona fide civil service organization. There has to be a finding that it will comply with the requirements and purposes of the chapter. I assume that there's language in the chapter that has to be used in the proceedings, isn't it?
That's correct.
Okay. So,
nonprofit trade association, that takes care of that.
Well, that's already true.
Yeah, I say that takes care of that.
But, what would happen, say, the home builders, political action committee, which has been in existence for 5 years, formed a charitable
legislation, Joe? What is it for? What's the background?
Well, as I said, it's
background.
It is special in the sense that, as I laid out, there is a regional corporation in Anchorage, Cook Inlet Region, okay? And it provides a variety of, through nonprofits, it provides a variety of social service activities to particularly natives in Anchorage. It finds that it cannot, those groups cannot get a bingo permit because while the region has existed since the Bill of Rights Act was passed, the nonprofits have not. And because of changes in federal funding and tax law, they would like to have an opportunity to apply for a bingo permit.
Every time you get into special interest legislation, you get into trouble.
Well, sometimes.
I'm just making a comment, general, not necessarily at Sarah or whatever the outfit is.
Our case is big bad luck.
Nick, do you have a question, Mr. Richard?
No.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Neil Lamb?
This would seem to have been down the slope a couple of times now, sir.
I'm Leo Lamb from Haines. I belong to a nonprofit organization, half a year's AB up there. I have a problem. I can realize what the corporations want up there. But you have to get another organization, more or less, as co-sponsor you to get into the bingo. We just say bingo. Because on your older state regulations that you're all aware of, you have to commit that money to main part of it to maintain your building, to run your health, and the rest of it has to go out for many various reasons, scholarships, a whole slew of things. So if, what you're creating, I'm afraid of, is like fisheries limited entry, the ones that are in, somebody else needs that money to start a new organization, irregardless of what organization it is. They need that money to function, to do social services work in their community. I can see the problem there, and I can understand what's going on, but it is limited entry, so help me God. That's the only problem I have with it, frankly. You get a profit organization, say, sure, you know, your five-year setup. I see the problem. Now we want voters on the limited entry anyway, the commercial fisheries. I don't know, I just have a question, maybe. As somebody suggested, maybe the AG department should look at it. Thank you.
Thank you,
sir.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I don't exactly know what the AG would contribute, but I have no objection to asking.
Well, the reason that I wanted to adopt this language so that we'd have one or the other, you're the prime sponsor, and it seemed to me you were interested in this new language, so right. Once we get that, then we'll go ahead and do something else. Nick?
Well, you know, I don't know whether the five-year qualifications is fair or not, but it's been fair up to this point, and would be rather unfair now. I would think that somebody could come in with just being here a matter that they are sponsored by an organization would be qualified as having a fire residency thing. And what I'm saying in effect is that all the ones that are qualified now had to be here and had to establish some type of a record. Whether that's a good concept or not, they paid their dues, so to speak. Not opening up to anyone who wants to do it, over being here just a month. Only because they're sponsored by somebody, some organization, profit or non-profit that's been here for 5 years. I don't know if that's fair.
What you're saying is that the Cook Inlet Native Association doesn't qualify now, right? Don't you want to find some way to make them qualify? Man, if they're in the bingo, and that's the only thing that's keeping them afloat,
they're not doing bingo at all.
I would say, if they want to get into bingo to keep themselves afloat, man.
Well, Mr. Chair, they're like any other group, except to be perfectly frank. They probably do a lot more social service work in Anchorage than most, because they have 6,400 stockholders who live in the Cook Inlet area.
Well, instead of going through all this rigmarole, why don't you just put it in their native corporation?
To amend the
main part of it, just put native corporation in there, so that flies.
I have no objection to doing that. I frankly anticipated that if I did that, I'd get a backlash from my colleagues and others saying, well, why should natives have this exemption and others not? You know, but if that's preferable,
I don't know. I mean,
we can certainly say that if you're affiliated with a native corporation, how would your department feel about that?
I think it would probably be easier just to strike the five-year
also have no problem with 5 years, because I don't think that's particularly rational.
I guess what you're trying to do is expedite the ability for them to have the bingo games. I've never got to do it in a couple of years anyway. So if they have to wait the 5 years like everybody else has waited, what's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with that is that their program is weakened and they can't provide the services to 6,400 people who need services.
Oh, come on, Joe.
Well, that's what's wrong with it.
There's people provide services.
Why do you
numerous bingo games up there? Legion
why do you? Why impede them if they serve good purposes? If you know that they're bona fide and if they're affiliated with a native corporation, what's the public purpose of impeding them?
I guess because we've already established public purpose.
Mr. Chairman, I'm willing to, if it's the sense of the committee or the majority of the committee that they would rather provide this change for native corporations only, that's acceptable.
I think you're really frustrating your own purpose, and I agree with you, there'd be a hell of a backlash, I really do.
But it would be more fair.
Well, if native groups have the problems, and the others so
I wouldn't have any problem with that.
With native?
Why?
Why what?
Why the natives and not anybody else?
Well, I like natives.
Well, so do I. So I like everybody else, too.
Would you have a job? Then you could mail it to the Martins on the floor.
On the street.
What about the Norwegians?
About who likes Norwegians?
I never met one yet.
We'll hold this over till.
Mr. Chairman, I will consult with the Attorney General.
Okay.
I will come back.
Bring back on Monday. Is that all right with you?
Yeah.
All right.
Joe, are you also going to look at the aspects of it? Probably be not constitutional the way it is written already, if I hear anything.
Well,
you can look into that, or
I asked that question to Mr. Barry when I first came up. I think his telephone advice to me was that he didn't think the existing language was unconstitutional. That was my first thought. But because it applies to organizations and not individuals, but I'll double check.
Well, we'll put it off till Wednesday then, you know, because Monday is a teleconference.
Okay, we got some assignments.
I have Senate Bill 504 relating to unauthorized use of computer and telecommunications service.
Thank you very much. Senate Concurrent Resolution 38, Penny John, relating to out-of-court settlements by the state. Senate Joint Resolution 36, Joseph Posick to Red State to favor certain residents of the Ziegler. And Committee Substitute for House Bill 373, Labor and Commerce, non forfeiture benefits and life insurance policies. We'll give that to the law. Once again, gentlemen, you're out.
I have a question. We have been good. What I'd like to do is to get
loaded in a block at the end of the day.
No, but solidarity for everyone. Oh, it's been very good. Doesn't seem to be any consistency in the practice. For example, we had a bill before about 3 weeks ago, and several last minute have been signed by you, which are analyzing it and reporting. They wrote it down to report one paragraph, which was very helpful on the court. And I know that at least I assume that Joe and Fritz and I are doing the same thing. We get these reports, and I'd like to see them made a part of the file when the bills come up for consideration in committee for the night.
Yeah.
Well, no, I didn't have anything in here today on. I don't see a copy of my letter that I wrote you about Joe's games of chance and contest. It wasn't in my file.
It's in my file.
Well, I know, but that doesn't help us out.
It's given to everybody's file and it's delivered to your office.
Hey. Mr. Chairman, are you seriously considering expanding the membership committee so we can get four laymen and three professionals? I was seriously thinking about that.
Situations like
we had today.
Oh boy.
This joke would be disgusting. In fact, we should have two extra members, two extra ad hocers ready to fill in to bring in when